I walk the length of what was once escape. Brass tacks rusted shut. Light flickered on antique signs, a gallery of almosts and dead ends. John was there, but not to guide me, not to save me, but to stand still at the exact moment my throat cracked open. He didn't give me my voice. He gave it witness. He gave it space. And in that moment, what had been trapped in my chest stepped forward without apology. This was the beginning, the reckoning, the part of the story where I stopped whispering and started becoming. Everyone else wandered, not trapped, just sedated, taught to forget the exits were real. But I saw it. A door, clear, unlocked, mine. So I left, without permission, without fanfare, only momentum. And then I flew without wings, just memory and muscle. Every time I realized I'm the one doing this, I dropped, but I rose again, messy, stubborn, alive. I passed treetops, gatherings, fragments of joy that weren't meant for me, yet. Then, a face emerging from the dirt like a warning, not still, but gnashing and snapping. A jaw that moved with hunger, teeth bared to pull me under. But he couldn't reach me. And I laughed, not to mock him, but because I was out of reach and he knew it. I flew too low and crashed into a house, a bedroom, a couple mid-dream. They screamed, "Get out." And I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be here." Not out of shame, but because it was theirs, sacred, and I had crossed into it without intention. Then I left. That's when I saw the payphone suspended too high, numbers floating like ghosts. I tried, but no answer. The officer asked, "Are you a prostitute?" Like a blade in the shape of a question. And I said, "Are you?" Because I had had enough of being reduced by men who couldn't carry their own projections. I didn't know where Rochester was, but I pointed north and flew. Later, I told John, and he said, "Trains are a hobby of mine." Of course they are. Because even then I was learning to track my own leaving to see where I'd been and where I refused to remain. The museum had a door. It always did. And I walked through it with my voice intact. I'm Em, and this is Don't Call Me, Season 2, Dreams Between Lives. The dream you just heard didn't come as a metaphor, it came as a doorway. Not a locked one and not a trick. Just a door no one else believed was there. But I did. And I walked through it. And that's where everything started to split open. The train museum wasn't just a setting, it was a feeling. The kind of stillness that isn't peace, but stagnation disguised as calm. The air was thick and nothing moved. People drifted from one exhibit to the next like grief tourists admiring what they used to be capable of. I understood them. I've been them. But that day in the dream, I wasn't wandering. I was looking. Because something in me knew this place wasn't a monument. It was a trap. And then I saw it. A door. Not hidden. Not metaphorical. An actual door, lit, clear, and wide open. No one else seemed to see it. Or if they did, they didn't care. Leaving had become unthinkable, and so I left. Outside, the air hit me like resistance. It didn't want me to go. I felt it in my limbs, like trying to sprint underwater. There was no clarity, no certainty, just me testing a power I didn't know I had. Flying wasn't smooth, it was work. Every time I became conscious of the fact that I was the one keeping myself up, I lost height. That realization was heavy. It made me falter, but it also made me stronger. And this wasn't magic, it was mastery, earned one unstable moment at a time. And then I saw a man's face rising from the ground like the earth itself was trying to reclaim me. Not watching, not waiting, snarling, gnashed and ready. His mouth moved like it had one purpose, to make me feel hunted. But he couldn't reach me, and that mattered, because for the first time I was above someone who once had power over me, so I laughed. Not because it wasn't terrifying, but because I was done shrinking. The next crash was real. I dropped too low. Flew straight through a window into a stranger's bedroom. I was breathless and shaking. They screamed. They had every right to. And I said the only true thing I could. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be here. At that moment mattered to me because even mid-survival, even mid-flight, I knew I had crossed the threshold I wasn't invited through. Apologizing didn't diminish me. It honored them. It honored me. Then I left. And that's when I saw the phone, high up, swaying, unreachable. A payphone, somehow ancient and holy. I didn't know who I was trying to call, maybe anyone, maybe someone I thought could help me land, but no one answered. And then an officer came out of nowhere, sudden and stern, as if I'd broken a law I didn't know existed. And he asked, "Are you a prostitute?" Ugh, that word again. Always tossed at women as a punishment for having bodies, for surviving, for being unapologetically free. I looked at him and laughed. "Are you?" Because when women trade safety for survival, they're degraded. But when men and governments sell out compassion, morality, community, we call it politics, we call it necessary, we call it just part of the job. I saw him clearly, not as a threat, but as a projection, a hollow question in a borrowed uniform. And I flew again. I didn't know where Rochester was. I still don't know how I found the direction, but I did, because some part of me remembered the difference between being still and being free. Later, I told John about my dream. He said, "Trains are a hobby of mine." Of course they are, because even in dreams, my body knew who could hold space for a return. His museum wasn't locked. It was just filled with people who stopped looking for exits. And me, I looked, I found one, and I didn't wait. Thank you for listening to this episode of Don't Call Me, Dreams Between Lives. Take care of yourselves and one another.